Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Tamara Day, a dynamic club singer and DJ, stands out as an artist who effortlessly transcends cultural, age, and language boundaries. Hailing from South Africa's vibrant dance music scene for the past two decades, Tamara has firmly established herself as a multi-genre sensation. Earning the title of the First Lady of Kwaito House and celebrated as an icon of township pop, Tamara's musical journey took flight in 2001 with the release of the chart-topping collaboration alongside Kwaito and House duo B.O.P. This collaboration marked the beginning of a successful solo career, producing hits like What Am I To Do, It's Disco, and Uyazi Moss. Venturing into new sonic territories, Tamara co-founded the hit-making EDM band Flash Republic with DJs Ryan Dent and Craig Massive. The exhilarating tracks such as Emergency, Star, and Twister captivated audiences for a decade, solidifying their presence on both local and international stages. Embracing her African roots, Tamara collaborated with esteemed artists like DJ Banj, DJ Maporisa, and Polamo, delivering infectious tracks that resonated with the global audience. Her chart-topping collaboration with DJ Zintle on Colors further highlighted her versatility and innovation in the music scene. Acknowledged as a staunch supporter of the LGBTQIA+ community, Tamara received a prestigious Feather Award in the category Fag Hag of the Year, highlighting her unwavering backing of the queer community. Her impact reverberated further when she was nominated for Pop Artist of the Year at the Basadi Women in Music Awards in 2023. Tamara's electrifying club and festival performances, characterized by high fashion and exuberant energy, have garnered widespread acclaim. She has headlined renowned events such as MCQP, SA Gin Festival, Bayzik Festival, and DJ Zintle's Z Nation Fest. In addition to regular appearances at popular venues like Cabo Beach Club, Zaza Darling, Babylon in Johannesburg, Bad Manners, and Club 101 in Cape Town. In 2022-23, Tamara made a triumphant return with the uplifting single Disco Therapy, which soared to the top of SA radio charts. Following the success of Disco Therapy, her single Promises topped the 5FM dance charts, paying homage to the legendary Brenda Fassie while captivating a new generation of fans. Continuing her musical journey, Tamara released the EP La Musica in collaboration with the Sampra Development Fund. Featuring the hits You and I, her collaboration with New York-based artist Young Close on this track displayed her seamless blend of musical styles, receiving praise on South African airwaves. Her latest single Appetite, a collaboration with German disco pop band The Planetoids, has been met with acclaim for its infectious indie disco vibe. With a focus on her evolving DJ and vocal brand, Tamara is captivating audiences across South Africa with her diverse sound palette from Afrotech to Tech House and Dark Disco. Up next on Celeb Savant, recorded live in studio at Solid Gold Podcast in Randburg, Johannesburg, South Africa, is Tamara Day. I am with Tamara Day.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us today on the show.
Super excited to be here.
We're diving straight in.
Great.
Let's rewind. At what age did you feel cool? You want to be in the creative music world.
Sure.
And I know it's a number of years, but how did that journey progress?
I can't recall what age I was, but I remember being a kid and I would have these visuals in my mind of myself on a stage in front of thousands of people. And I think I verbalized it once or twice to my friends, and I think they just sort of bobbed it off as craziness. It was sort of, as a kid, it's such a almost an unimaginable thing to attain. Like, how? I'd always wanted to perform. I was always, you know, doing ballet and this and that and in the school play and, you know, trying to start a band and whatever I could. As a young kid, I was always into music. I think I knew all my parents' albums off by heart and back to front. And, you know. So yeah, was had been bitten by the musical bug super young. And at one point wanted to become a ballerina. Realized that wasn't going to be the thing. I danced competitively from when I was really young. And I think doing it young, by the time I got to high school, I was like over it.
Yeah.
And then it was sort of just wanted to kind of be in a band and go to parties and that kind of a thing, you know. And then at a young age started to sneak out to clubs because I wanted to perform with DJs.
Okay.
Started to jump up while I was still in high school with sort of any DJ really who would have me jump up and do some vocals. And I think that was really – I think that time, you know, I'd been in a few bands and that kind of thing. But I think at that time I knew that dance music, that once that penny dropped – once I stood at a festival and heard, you know, vocals over house music and just thought, that's going to be me. And that was more specific. It was, you know, I knew I wanted to be doing that kind of vocal over that kind of music. And the only way I could really see to get myself there was to kind of jump up with like I said, any DJ yeah. who would let me. So I would like write little hooks in a book that I had and I would go around to, you know, DJs' little places where they had, you know, a turntable set up, and I would, you know, just freestyle some hooks and over some records, and I'd then go and do that in the clubs. A lot of it was quite, you know, or unplanned, and some of it was, you know, I would just write little ideas and then sort of freestyle and embellish that live. And just loved it, and then from then was very, you know, was fully immersed in the dance music culture, you know, from when I was like 16. So I really got a big education in dance music from a young age, and then toyed with many different genres of dance, you know, everything from drum and bass, house, you name it. I explored it and performed over it, and essentially started teaming up with producers who could produce it and who I could then, you know, write with and start developing vocals over dance music, etc. And, you know, that led to all the big things, you know, this experimenting and jumping up with DJs is ultimately what led to my big break into the music industry. I was performing, yeah, we were just rehearsing. I was rehearsing with a DJ at a house where there happened to be some turntables, which was always the big mission, where we were going to find a DJ setup. So we'd missioned out. I grew up in Pretoria, and we'd missioned out to a house in Madrid to go and rehearse basically for a club set. A dude walked in there with his bags. He'd just come in from the airport, and it happened to be Osquito from Kalawa Jasmine Records, younger brother Pepsi. And he waltzed in, and there was a sort of, you know, girl in his lounge singing over house music. And he was like, ah. So we got chatting, and he was like, well, what's the dream? I said, well, you know, do you know Masters at Work? And I was like, you know, I want to, that's the kind of thing. And he was like, oh, we actually know them really well. He whipped out a photo album, and he was showing me pictures of Osquito and Vinny Da Vinci, who I knew actually from the Pretoria scene, but, you know, all hanging out with Louis Vega and Kenny Dope Gonzalez, and they were all in Ibiza together. And he was like, oh, yeah, we all, you know, big pals. And I think a year after that, well, not even, it was a few months. Yeah, maybe about a year after that, I was performing at the Electric Workshop with Kenny Dope and Louis Vega and the whole Masters at Work crew on this huge party that Osquito and them were involved in. And I was the sort of vocalist of the night. So, I mean, that's just that. Yeah. I mean, that was like, I remember standing on a dance when it was Runaway. Which is a song that is featured on Nuri Consol on Classic Masters at Work album. It was that song that I heard on the dance floor specifically, and I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And so to, you know, jump forward and there I am sitting in a press conference next to Kenny Dope and just noticing that his hands are literally the same size as a vinyl. And just thinking, you know, wow. I think this is, it's wow, full circle moment, really amazing moment. So yeah, so that was it. So once Pepsi found me in his lounge, introduced me to Osquito, the rest was history. You know, I recorded with Brothers of Peace, and we had a huge song, a couple of huge songs that came out, within the sort of quieter house market. And I went on tour with them, and we shot videos, and I got to see and experience the urban music industry in a way that not many white girls from Pretoria have. And it was phenomenal. And it shaped me and shaped my career and shaped my, yeah, a lot of what I would go on to do. And it was an incredible experience. And yeah, from there, I just kind of, you know, I also realized very quickly that there was more I wanted to explore. And after a couple of years of doing this sort of house quieter thing, I wanted to go and do my own thing and do things my own way. And I moved away from that scene, and I'd met Craig Massive, and we had started making some deep house together under under the name Soul Cooler. And that did really well. I don't know how, but it got into like BBC radio, and like we had these like white label records, and I don't know. It just sort of like, I remember seeing the printouts from the label of where the songs were playing, and it was like all over Europe, and it didn't really do anything in South Africa. But if you were like a serious house head and you were a vinyl collector, like a lot of the sort of deep house guys knew about Soul Cooler, but on mass level in South Africa, nobody really knew about it. And I think I'd gone under a different identity. It might have said Misidentity or something like that. I can't remember why. Something to do with a contract I was signed into or something like that, that I was still attached to. I can't remember all the details, but we released this music and Craig and I had formed a massive connection. And of course, we then went on to form Flash Republic together with Ryan Dent. And that led on to the next 10 years with Flash Republic, which were some of the best years of my life for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Bunch of questions.
Listen, I can go on. Now we're in the, I don't know what years we're in now. We're in the 2000s now.
Okay. So we'll get to the next phase in a moment.
We'll
get to the next phase.
It's like two decades.
Yeah. We'll get to the next phase now.
Yeah. I thought I'd give it a break and you can take me down a different road.
So pre-realizing that you were, you wanted to be in the dance scene, you mentioned or you referenced that you were in bands.
Mm.
So when you were in those bands, did it feel like, oh, this doesn't feel right, it does not really a connection, until you found the dancing and you knew that was that?
No, God, I love being in bands. I grew up on my dad's rock music. Okay. I knew the lyrics to every Doors song when I was like 3 years old. So like I think, I grew up on all my parents' rock and roll and, you know, they didn't listen to dance music. So that's what I grew up on. My dad was very into music and, he was very passionate about music. He wasn't a musician himself, but he was very knowledgeable about music. We used to have these Friday night music sessions. It was like a family music night. And we'd sit in the lounge. Like we'd usually sit in the TV room, but on Friday night we'd sit in the lounge and Dad would whip out the albums. And then we would have these deep chats about various musicians and all the stories he knew, you know. And it was really special. It was a really beautiful way to connect with my dad. I also connected with him in that way about art. He would take me to art galleries and we had this – it was like our special thing, you know. And that was something I also dabbled in quite heavily. And I know my art teacher was very – she was hoping I would go and study art. And I was like, I'm going to go and rave. so I went a slightly different direction. But yeah, that all came from my dad, you know, a love for art and music and really all forms of art and how they all kind of come together. But going back to what you were saying about being in bands, I love being in bands.
Okay.
Look, dance music is just – and which is essentially why with Flash Republic, I started to, encourage the guys to look at bringing in live musicians.
Yeah.
I felt like, and when we started to blend the sort of rock and the dance, those elements from that sort of, in those indie dance days, and we started to bring in that live element with, you know, we were the first real live dance band in South Africa and we were the first to do it in that way. That fusion of the live with the dance music was, I mean, I feel like it led to us writing some of our best music, you know, our strongest songs for sure. And it's just a different energy on stage as well. That combination is just, it's so awesome. So those rock influences and, you know, the live band, experiences I had definitely have come into play over the years. I mean, I still to this day perform, love to perform with live bands,
yeah,
and always like to include a live musical element, whether I'm DJing and I've got a live saxophonist and I'm throwing down a little vocal here and there, or whether, you know, I'm doing, you know, my Tomorrow Day set and it's, I'm, you know, doing live vocals and I've got, you know, modern rock and guitar and gamon percussion. I have always loved that element mixed in with the dance element. Yep. Like, that combination for me is definitely when I'm at my happiest, you know? So I really enjoy that. I really enjoy it where those two worlds meet. Mm.
Now, when you started going to clubs and you just wanted to sing those hooks with the DJs.
Yeah.
How did that work? Were they like, who's a strange person? Yeah. Why do they want?
Yeah.
Until someone let you do it. So what was that process?
Sure. I mean, I was probably just this annoying chick who was just like, hey, I would love to hear from a couple of the DJs I approached and get their perspective on what that was like. I really love, cause I actually don't know, but I think I immersed myself in the party scene and, you know, surrounded myself with those people, you know, whether they liked it or not. And I guess, and, you know, I don't know if I just suggested it and some, I think also, I guess there was some other singing going on. I had been in one or two bands in high school and people knew that I sang. Like there was, so there may have been some, you know, sort of, it wasn't just out of nowhere. I think people may have been like, oh, apparently she's a singer. There might have been a little bit of that,
yes,
which might have helped. But really, there were friendships that I'd formed and then I kind of wangled my way into these connections and managed to, I don't actually know how I did that. Come to think of it, I don't know if I've just forgotten why. I don't know what that strategy was. But really, I mean, to anyone listening who is, you know, trying to figure out how to get a toe in. Like, I just hustled my way in there. And really, it's about surrounding yourself with the people that you, you know, want to meet, you know, other musicians. It doesn't matter what it is, from bands, DJs, just whether you're going to those spaces and taking it in and having the, you know, just being brave and like going over, introducing yourself. These things, you know, these small connections, they matter, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I know it seems like, where do I start? How could I possibly get there?
Mm.
And it's going to start with just surrounding yourself with, you know, the energy you want to become.
Like, exactly.
And immersing yourself in music. And that's it. Like, that's what I did. You know, I just, and essentially it indirectly led to me being discovered. Like, I was just at the right place at the right time. You could never recreate that moment. But because I was engaging and because I was, you know, pursuing it at every opportunity and just, you know, the guy that I was, you know, there with at that house wasn't even making, he was a bit more like hard house from what I can remember. And it wasn't really the style I wanted to do, but it was an opportunity to perform.
Yes.
And so I was hungry for it. You know, I just, and any experience was, you know, I was chasing all that experience.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it led to me being at this house randomly. And this dude walking in with these suitcases, like the timing was like, you know, and people always ask, like, how did you do it? How did you break through? And it was just like, no, you'll never have that same experience. But I can tell you what I was doing that landed me up at that house.
Yes.
And that's what you need to be doing.
Yes.
You need to be engaging. You need to be just, you know, introducing yourself to people, whatever, surrounding yourself with music makers of all kinds, collaborating whenever you can, because you just don't know what magic is going to come out of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's about showing up and pitching up.
That's
and
it.
And saying yes.
Actually. Yeah. And any bit of engagement is one step closer to your dream. Like, literally, whether it's, you know, developing your art, your craft, you know, immersing yourself in music at home, trying to create, trying to connect. It doesn't matter. Messaging people online. I still hit up like the people I look up to, like on social media. And just like, if I see something, if there's an amazing DJ that I'm just like awestruck by, I'm reposting them and
yeah.
They're, you know, they message you back and you're like, oh my God. Like, yeah. You know, I'm still that girl. Yes. I'm still trying to connect. I'm still trying to push myself into spaces. We're all in the same boat.
Exactly.
Like, I know you people can look at somebody, you know, you can look at somebody's social media page and think, oh, wow, they've made it. Like, you know, it's a journey.
Exactly.
It's really debatable. I don't know if, you know, I think it's a journey and you're, you know, wherever it looks like I might be, trust me, there's some other place I'm trying to get to. Like, and I'm on that same mission. Yep. Like, we're all on that same mission. We're all trying to expand and we're all trying to grow our music and, work with people we dream of working with.
And also, it doesn't matter what industry you're in.
Mm.
A lot of people perceive that a person who's more successful or has a title or a label is separate to them. So they feel oh no, you can't talk to this person because they're separate.
Yeah.
And no. A lot of people offer me and everyone uses two-ply. No one has gold-plated toilet paper.
Exactly.
So when I speak to yourself, it's the same way I speak to the tea lady, the same way I speak to friends. Everyone is the same.
Yeah.
And a lot of people perceive that people in the entertainment industry, especially if they're more successful or whatever, oh no, we can't talk to them because, you know, there's that whole separateness of it.
There is. And I think some celebs give us a bit of a bad rap, you know?
Yes.
And I used to be kind of judgy about it because I'm always like, I'm not in that. I'm the same person you would meet at any point. But I have come to understand, I think, and have a bit more compassion for them because I feel like nobody gives you a tool book and goes like, well, this is how you need to deal with fame and this is how you're going to deal with, you know, people coming up to you. And what a lot of people do, I mean, even somebody like me, and this surprises people and they don't believe it and they laugh at me too, but I am actually a little bit shy. I know what you're thinking. I have like a learned confidence. I was very insecure when I was young. I was like, I always worried way too much what people thought about me. And I would shy away from the spotlight. So for example, any competitive situation I'd remove myself from and to my own detriment, I think, you know, caring too much what people think is really just a complete waste of your time. And if you can stop doing it, please do. It took me a long time to get better at that. It's a waste of energy. And, you know, you could miss out on many opportunities to just be the artist that you are. And like I say, be standing in somebody's lounge, belting out a note, and next thing you've got your big break kind of thing. So don't do what I did. But I was always kind of shying away. Whereas when people see somebody like me, they think, oh, I love the spotlight.
Yes.
And I love the attention. And you know, people aren't always like that. And I think that's why I'm trying to get back to sort of celebs who handle those situations badly. I feel like sometimes they just don't handle it well because they're not equipped.
Yes.
You know, I kind of learned to start, even though I was like cringing inside, just to say thanks when somebody comes up and is like putting themselves in a vulnerable position to come up and say like, I loved you. I loved your show. My goodness. Just say thank you.
Yeah.
And I got better at that. I got better at just saying, wow, thank you so much. And being able to engage with people and, you know, and it is something that I think a lot of people get very uncomfortable with. And it's easier for them to be an asshole than to actually give people the time and that connection. I'm quite good at, but I think other people maybe aren't and have gone with a different approach, which gives us a terrible rip. It really does. It really does. And I also like, I think for me, like I really value, I am a fan. I'm a freaky music fan before anything else. So like I have been in many situations where I've had an opportunity to meet some of the people I really look up to and I've completely unraveled, like embarrassingly. And in my head, it's going to go so smooth. And I'm like, we're all on the same level.
Yes.
And then it doesn't really work out that way. And I understand what it feels like to go up to somebody who inspires you and put yourself in such a vulnerable position and just say like, wow, I love you. Like, well, you've changed my life or whatever it is. I really value that. I really value that, you know, to know that your music is still reaching people, or it's having an impact, is so important for the artist. So that interaction, I'll always make time for it and always value it. And I feel like in South African culture, like music culture, I don't know if the fans really understand the power that they wield, they yield. Is it yield or wield?
Both.
Okay, great. We'll take both. That they wield and yield. In terms of the cycle of the music industry, I feel like in some other places in the world, they've sort of got it right, where the fan understands their value as part of the cycle. Mm. They are fully involved, fully dedicated. They fully own the music they listen to because they understand it's a part of their identity. It's, mm-hmm. this is how I let the world know who I am.
Yes.
Because this is the language I speak. I relate to this language. This is the way I dress. They understand that. Whereas I feel here we haven't fully, explored it onto in that level as the fan. And so for me, the fan is as important as the artist. Without the listener, we don't even exist. And it's just like that cycle and that symbiotic relationship. Exactly. So for me, anyone coming up to me to say anything or just to come and connect, I respect and it's very valuable. That relationship is between myself and the listener. Very important.
Absolutely.
And I'm one myself, so I understand it from the other side exactly. very well. Yeah.
Okay. Now, especially with social media, you have people that think especially with more celebs in inverted commas, or people who are more well known, the people who view them believe that they know who they are and know all about them. For you, when you get a person who's like, thinks in inverted commas, I'm trying to think of the correct words, or feels that they know you and are your friends, and meantime you've never met them before.
Yeah.
How do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
how
I do. You,
how do you balance that? Yeah.
Look, it hasn't all been good experiences. I think when there's a lot of love and passion, you know a lot about an artist and you really are like and you've had almost like an intimate connection with them that the rest of the world don't even know about. You've been in your bedroom going through something, connecting to this music on a super deep level where you feel like this person is literally telling my story.
Yeah.
There is an intimate exchange there that connects a listener to an artist in a way that is almost unexplicable. Like, do you know what I mean? Which gives them that feeling of like, I know you.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And I think it comes from there, from those like private unseen moments where you're, just going through something and you've connected on a level, and maybe that artist isn't necessarily connected back on that same level, but that connection is there and it's deep, it runs deep. So I understand that feeling where you feel like, I know this person and I can, I have been approached many occasions and it hasn't gone, ended up well, where people, there's almost no filter. People feel like they can sort of say anything to you and in the same breath, they forget they don't know you and they don't actually know what's going on in your world really, or what you might be going through. And then there's this lack of, it's like, you feel like you're not being treated like a human being in that moment, even though they're feeling, the other person's feeling so deeply connected.
Yeah.
Or that they've forgotten that you just a girl with going through some shit with some feelings, like, having a, difficult, dealing with all the same difficulties everybody else is and the same challenges. I had a guy come up to me in a bar one night, and I mentioned earlier, always care too much what people think. So, and I've learned the hard way not to like overshare or let too much. I would keep a lot close to my chest. I don't share too much on social media about what's going on in my private life. And then before social media, I wouldn't really share much with people around because I feel like sometimes it would sort of flip on you.
Yeah.
So I would keep a lot so close to my chest. I didn't want anyone to think I was like boasting about my. That was just me being in my head again about like what people would think of me, right? And I remember being in this little club bar thing, and a guy was like at the bar, and he was like, "Oh, aren't you Tomorrow Day?" And we got chatting, and he was like, well, what are you doing at the moment? Like, what are you working on? And immediately I was like, oh, I didn't want to talk about myself like that. You know, I just immediately was just like, mm. But he kind of was like, he just went on and eventually I started to let my guard down. Right. And I feel like, okay, well, let me tell him then a bit about what I'm, you know, doing, because he just kept us, you know, kept on. And eventually I let my guard down a bit and told him a little bit of, you know, what I was up to and so forth. And he turned around and said, but you know what your problem is? And I was like, yes. And he was like, you're in this for the wrong reasons. You know, like,
wow.
It's like, and I was like, well, no, that's really not correct. And then from there, it just got weird. There was like a girls and there was a male and female bathroom at the back in the day. And I was waiting to get into the girls' toilet and he was also there and he got like a little physical with me. He just kind of like, you know, he wanted me to come and meet his friends or something. And he kind of pulled me by the arm and I got very offended because he'd sort of like crossed the line with me.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't take no for an answer. And I said, pull my arm away. And I said, just, you know, no, and leave me. And he went into a huge rant in front of a whole lot of people standing there, you know, about, you know, what a BITCH was. And, you know, I was just a really crap person and all the rest. And then he went back to a table of friends and relayed that message further to the people he had arrived with. And some of my mates were at another table listening to this whole thing. So, you know, you can see how it can go.
Yes. Yes.
You can kind of let your guard down a bit and engage. And then you sort of like have a bit more compassion for those artists that are, their approach is just to be a bit of an asshole. Like, but look, these are not, this doesn't happen all the time. And for the most part, like I say, I'm always incredibly grateful and excited to hear feedback from people that want to come and engage and, you know, have something, you know, positive to share and share in a good moment, you know. But yeah, coming back to you, what you were saying, yes, sometimes people do think they have you all figured out and they really don't.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that I don't reveal about myself to the public.
Mm. It's important.
There's a lot I don't. I never want to feel like I'm out there whining about my life. I never want to be complaining about things. There are some personal things I've shared because I felt like I wanted to get ahead of something.
Mm.
I'm recovering from a major stomach surgery right at the moment. I'm 5 weeks post surgery.
Oh, wow.
In 2020 and 21, I fell very ill. It was sort of during the pandemic and I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis and I had like 3 major stomach surgeries and a stoma bag and like crazy, crazy, crazy experience. Really, really just very challenging. And I kept it very quiet. Like I didn't talk about it at all. It's not like me to talk about my health out there. Like I'm just like, brother, you.
Yeah.
But other people handled things differently. But also it was post the pandemic and I was absolutely terrified that people wouldn't book me because I was sick. And it was a really, really difficult time. We hadn't worked. I don't think I'd worked for like 8 months and I had my little daughter and my mom to look after. And it was a tough time.
Yeah.
And I needed to be on stage and I didn't want anyone to know I was sick. And I was on stage, you know, performing colors with like a stoma bag and a musket. Nobody knew. So I'm talking about it now because I ended up having to have another surgery. Okay. Mm. And I regretted not being more verbal about it and missing an opportunity to help people.
Yeah.
And to just, you know, there's so many people living with these conditions permanently with stoma bags or suffering from Crohn's and ulcerative colitis and all these kinds of things. And it's a not very represented ailment in the public. It doesn't get talked about a lot and that kind of thing. And I feel like I had missed an opportunity to, you know, represent people who were going through this and, you know, show people what it looks like to be living with this and still be on stage performing and, you know, despite the struggles that are going on, living my life, etc. Yeah. And just being an encouraging voice to people going through it and an honest voice.
Yep.
So having to go back for the surgery, a second hernia repair surgery post the others, I've now been in a position to just, I don't know, just I'm a lot more excited to talk about it and okay. just, you know, and just share a little bit of this journey with people. So I am doing that. Why was I telling you this though?
To share on social media. You're sharing personal.
In the part, I mean, I would never. You know, I share music, I share art that I'm obsessed with. I literally, if I find an artist that I'm obsessed with, I'll go and share their work on my Instagram. It's very much about that. It's about sharing art and creativity and things that inspire me. And it's all very much about that. So I don't really like to zone in on the tough stuff.
Yeah.
I've kind of always, you know, kept that close. And that, But I think there's something to be said for, you know, having a platform and being able to help people with it. Like, you know what I mean?
Like that balance,
So this is something I'm exploring. And it is very new to me to be so, to, you know, put that kind of thing out there and, you know, so hopefully I'm getting it right. Forgive me if I make any mistakes along the way.
That's how we all learn.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
First question, and then we're going to the rest of the journey.
Okay.
Why the name Flash Republic? Mm. And then the next steps of the journey after Flash Republic.
Okay. So why the name Flash Republic? That is a really good question. I'm sure we asked ourselves as well many times. No, we the weird thing about us is we had gigs before we had a name. So it was like we had some material and Ryan Dent had booked us some shows in Europe, like. And we were literally going to go on tour and he had booked us our first gig in South Africa post the European tour, which was at the castle, on New Year's Eve. And the guy from that gig was asking Ryan what the name of the act was. And we didn't have a name. So it was like this really weird backwards thing where we hadn't quite figured that part out yet. Yeah. We knew we had an act and we knew we were excited about the music we were making, but we had no idea what we were called. I think having made the music first was kind of cool because we understood the energy of what was starting to happen.
Mm.
And so we knew we had a kind of list of, from what I can remember, I know that we were like messaging each other back and forth, suggesting names and, we all loved Flash. We all loved Flash. Like, this felt right. We picture like a lightning bolt. Yeah. It was very like, this was a vibe. And I think honestly for about a week or two, it was like Flash this, Flash that. I think we paired the word Flash with pretty much every word in the English dictionary. there were a couple that we sort of were like leaning towards and then somebody said Flash Republic and everyone was like, and it was just a collective and a collective yes. And that was it. And that's what we went forward with. The Flash Republic. We really lived up to that name. I don't think we knew or could even have imagined the journey that lay ahead of us. Like really. But thinking back to the energy how that name came about, and it is all from an energy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, think about, And we really did live up to that name. I mean, I don't think we could have known what our destiny would hold, but like it was a very special time. But I remember us being at that gig, at the castle. It was for a promoter called Raymond Bloom, and he gave us he took a bit of a chance on us. Ryan and Craig were quite big DJs in the scene. And so they had quite a bit of respect out there. And I think that was, why a lot of promoters took a chance on Flash Republic in the beginning, and I had obviously a bit of a name. We managed to get onto these like sort of big dance party like lineups, and I remember that New Year's gig, like nobody had ever heard of us. We'd literally just named ourselves, like like we'd never performed a gig in South Africa. We'd only played a few shows in Europe, and we'd been in the studio, and we stood on stage, and there were maybe like a handful of people on the dance floor, and it was outside on this huge stage. And I think like three songs in, there were like 6,000 people standing in front of us or a couple of thousands. Like everyone had just sort of collected in front of the stage. And we were looking at each other with big eyes, like over our shoulders at each other, like, and we, like you, we didn't have to say it, but we were all feeling the same thing, which was just this like, oh my goodness, like this was a moment that bigger than us, and we could feel something big was going to happen, and this was the start of it. Like, and we all knew it. You could feel it in the air. It was just this like, how did we attract all these people to the stage? They never heard the songs before. It's all original music, like original dance music nobody had ever heard. And here were all these people like raging away at this big party. And I think we knew then like this was going to be a thing. And it was amazing. Yeah.
You've got a new EP out now.
I do.
Tell us about it.
I'd love to. I released it through David Gresham Records last year. Wow. I can't remember when the full EP dropped. Might have been earlier this year, but I released one or two singles prior to that. So during the pandemic, I think this project was probably my response to all of that.
Okay.
The world was just going through so much, and I felt it very necessary to make music that would lift people up, that would, you know, allow them to escape and imagine and dream and feel sexy and, you know, fun. And for me, I needed to go back to disco inspired sound. Mm. I dabbled with some of that in the past. But that's where it was for me. I needed, just my own healing as well from all of it. Like, so that's the music I needed to make. And I tracked down, quite a legendary producer DJ called, Gary Van Ritz, who I knew had like one of the biggest, disco collections in the country. And I phoned him up and harassed him and said, I need to come and go through your vinyl. And he said, sure, come over. And I went and hung out with him and sat in his like epic room filled. And we just listened to records, and, we sampled a couple of records, and we just started messing around in the studio. And yeah, I started quietly like just developing the sound from this, at the back end of the pandemic. It was very on and off because the world was a bit strange at that time. And so it was over quite a period that we were developing this. But the messaging in the songs and what I wanted to say, that was all very clear. Like, you know, I understood what I wanted to say, with this music. And, we had a blast, just the two of us. I'd come from working on a project before that where there were about 100 producers, and I don't think I'll ever do that again. when it came to trying to pull that project together, it was an absolute nightmare. But I mean, they were all phenomenal producers. Unfortunately, that project never got off the ground, but, for other reasons, but I did have a few releases of it. But, this time around, it was just me, Gary and I, and a passion for disco.
Yes.
bringing it sort of into the now in a very tomorrow day way.
Yeah.
And I co-produced the project with him, and, got to work with some amazing musicians who came and jumped on the project. I had zero budget for the project, like zero. And I made that album with Gary literally off good friendships, support, and, you know, people jumped on who support and believed in me and understood, you know, we were coming out of this pandemic. Like, nobody had any money. And we just made it happen.
Yeah.
And Aggression signed the project, and we just started pushing it out. I worked it on the album at Jazzworks. Rob and Cole was involved, and the crew at Jazzworks there. I've been working with them for many years. It was amazing. We had some. I had people like Rocco De Villiers jump on the project and do some keys. Yeah, it was just, it was a lot of fun. We had, I can't remember who, Godfrey and Tumble did some sax. I did one of the exciting tracks on the project was a rework of Brenda Fassie's Promises, which has been, I've been singing that song for like 20 years. And I'll tell you, I was booked to perform it as a tribute show to some of South Africa's great female artists. And I performed Yvonne Chaka Chaka's Umkhonkothi and Brenda Fassie's Promises. And I'd actually met Brenda, I'd met Yvonne, of course, but I'd met Brenda as well at a couple of events when I just broke into the industry. And she always would call me from across the room. And I was just, she was such a big personality, and I was so shy and so insecure. And she would call me over, and I would literally be like unraveling. And I would go over there and just, you know, and she was always very cool to me. Like, she always said, she always had good things to say.
Mm.
And I, it was cool to know that she'd noticed me.
Yes.
You know, and that she saw what I was doing in the Kwaito scene, and it felt good. But she was so, you know, I didn't know looking at her that what terrified me about her was just that I was in a, I wasn't where she was. I wasn't comfortable with who I was. I was uncomfortable in my own skin.
Yes.
And this was a woman who was so unapologetic about who she was, like just unapologetic. And that terrified me.
Yeah.
Like, and then coming now, by the time it came, you know, I sang Promises with my band for many years. There was no backing track in existence. If there had been, I would have been singing it in the clubs, but I would perform it when I had a live band playing with me, and loved it so much. I performed it also at a memorial service for her when she, after she sadly passed. And it was, it's a very special song to me. Sitting with Gary in the studio making all this like disco house, and then I was like, I kept thinking about Promises. I thought, no, this was actually Brenda's era, because now we're dabbling with 70s.
Yeah.
And she was like 70s, 80s, 90s. And I thought maybe this is finally, because I could never really release Promises because it just didn't make sense.
Mm.
It didn't make sense with the Flash Republic stuff. It didn't make sense with some of the other darker dance stuff that I was doing. And just never really, so I never did anything. But once I was making this disco house, it was time. And I was finally that person that was confident about myself and unapologetically me. And I was ready to kind of, you know, perform Promises and do it justice and, you know, give it my own swing and my own touch and make it tomorrow's version kind of thing, you know, and do that confidently. And, oh, and listen, I didn't take the experience lightly when we were sweating blood in the studio, because I'd say to the guys, if this song is anything less than awesome, like, we're not releasing it, because you can't mess with a Brenda song like that. So we were like, oh, there were a few moments where I was like thinking about her, thinking she's laughing at us right now, like just actually having a chuckle, like, because we were like, okay, this has got to be really good, like, okay. But we just had an absolute blast doing it, and I'm so proud of it, like, really, I'm so proud of it, and I get such a kick out of having this version to perform, and I can perform it in the clubs, and I can perform it everywhere, and just have honored her in that way. Mm. Wow. So it's, and it was really, you know, I didn't take, I was trying to get, you know, the beautiful thing about Promises, it was self-penned by her.
Yeah.
So I love that about it as well, that it was that she wrote it.
And the name of the EP, remind us of the name?
La Musica.
La Musica, I like that. So I love this game.
Yeah.
Just top of mind. I know if I had to ask this question in 2 minutes, 20 years, 5 minutes, 50 hours, I know your answer will be different every time, simply because in millions of them, I recognize that and I understand that.
Okay.
I'm not saying favorite, like I said, I'm saying top of mind.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Any reasoning, 5 songs that you play by other artists once you finish this conversation, what would those songs be and by whom?
Okay. Robin, Dancing on My Own. Oh, Jessie Ware. But what's the song called? Oh, no. I can hear it in my head. Free Yourself.
Yes, that's it. I know that one.
You know it?
Yes.
It's so good.
Yes, I know it.
I
was going to say Free, and then you said it.
Like, yeah.
On the same page,
Oh, wow, I'm terrible at this.
If you can't think of three other artists.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I know. And, okay. Right now, off the top of my head, probably some Charlie XCX, Loving Brat, but I've been a Charlie fan for a long time because I come from the indie dance days and I did that whole scene and loved that edgy pop vibe. I mean, I was listening to bands like Crystal Castles and like crazy edgy stuff back in the day, and naturally you would then go on to discover Charli XCX in her earlier days.
Yeah.
And when she did the iconic pop song and
I've
always been a fan.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to see her exploding right now on a even bigger platform. She's also like iconically written amazing songs for other artists. I've always understood the brat vibe. I think she's always been brat, that whole concept. And it's fun to see it just going crazy out there.
Mm.
Another artist that I'm quite, intrigued by is Chapel Roan, who I've been like, I haven't quite immersed myself fully in it. what I've been watching and just been quite intrigued. And so I'm exploring that.
One more.
I'm not mentioning all the major artists that I know and love. I'm just mentioning anything that's coming to mind.
Yeah, but that's the point.
I hear you. Okay, well, so that's what's in the forefront of my mind right now. Oh, and then, to be honest with you, I'm listening to so much dance music right now. Yes, as a DJ, I am like buying music on a weekly basis, and there's so much of it. I can't even right now think about a single, because there's just too many.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't have another one for you.
That's
fine. If I think of another one, I'll let you know. I'm terrible with this. If you ask me what my best friend's name is on the spot, I'll probably forget. Or my favorite color, or or my top five movies. I literally, you'll get a message from me 24 hours later with a,
Here's the list.
A serious list. But in the moment, I really suck at
this. No, that's okay. That's okay. So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Go and explore my music. It's been an amazing journey. Go and connect with it. I would love you to do that. That'd be really cool. And what else? What else do I want to say? There's incredible music being made in the world right now. And artists love and appreciate your support. So go and immerse yourself in it and let the music do what it's supposed to do, you know? Be a part of that cycle.
Yeah.
But like really be a part of it. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.